Executive Director John Farnham go through some of the protocols, procedural protocols.
Thank you. As the chair said, my name is John Farnham. I'm the executive director of the Philadelphia Historical Commission. Today's meeting is being recorded, and by participating in the meeting, you are consenting to being recorded. The recording will be available after the meeting on the Historical Commission's website, www.phila.gov/historical. That's phila.gov/historical. Also on the website, on the public meetings tab, you'll find everything you need to participate in the meeting. That includes the meeting agenda, also all of the applications that the Architectural Committee will be reviewing, and any public comment that we received by noon yesterday. Every agenda item includes an opportunity for comment. If you'd like to comment, you'll need to use the raise your hand feature in Zoom at the appropriate time, *9 if you're on the telephone. And then once you've been acknowledged to speak, you need to unmute yourself, *6 if you're on the telephone. We can go to the presentation. Thank you. Just a couple of other comments. The committee typically makes its decisions by unanimous consent, but if there is apparent disagreement among the committee members, we can conduct a roll call vote. Then finally, the Historical Commission has adopted guidelines for conduct at its meetings. Those are available on the website. If you're unfamiliar with those, please take a look at that. And then one final note, the application for 3301 Hamilton Street has been removed from the agenda. You will not find it. It was scheduled for 10:45, so the committee will not be hearing that application today. Thanks very much. I'll turn it back to the chair.
Thank you, John. And we'll begin by introducing ourselves. Justin?
Justin Detweiler of the committee.
John?
John Kluver of the committee.
Amy?
Amy Stein, committee.
Allison?
Allison Lukacik, committee.
Nan?
Nan Gutterman, committee.
And Rudy?
Rudy D'Alessandro, committee member.
And Dan McCoubrey, committee member. So let's move to the first item on the agenda. It's 415 to 17 South 3rd Street.
Good morning, everyone. This is Allison Maley of the staff. If I can ask you to hold on just a moment, I'm actually having some technical difficulties right now and having trouble accessing the presentation. Hold on just a moment.
While Allison is sorting out the presentation, the first applicant is Jeff Wyant. So if Jeff could be elevated to the panelist level, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Hey, if you can hold on for just a moment, Kim's actually, because I'm having some technical difficulties, Kim is going to go ahead and share. But while we are, wait just a moment for that. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, great. Thank you so much. So this application proposes to alter the infill openings at 415 to 17 South 3rd Street. The building was constructed in 1970 as part of the redevelopment of Society Hill and is classified as contributing to the Society Hill Historic District. The scope of work includes enclosing an arched exterior alcove on the front facade to create additional interior living space. Other changes include enlarging an original rear entry for a larger door system and removing the glazing from a rooftop element. So just to summarize this real quick again, so there, the proposal is to enclose a double height alcove on the front facade with a new window system. Remove the original half arch opening on the rear facade and replaced with a glazed folding wall. And the third thing is remove glazing from the rooftop element. And the staff recommendation, approval of the alterations to the rear entry and upper window, but denial of the infill on the front alcove pursuant to standards 2 and 9. And Jeff Wyant is here today to present this application. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. I'm Jeff Wyant. I'm with Maria Wyant, my partner. I'd like to talk about why we would want to make this alteration to the front facade. One of the main reasons is that with the current entrance, the way you enter the building, you come into a 5x7 vestibule, not even a vestibule, just a foyer space. It's very cramped and there's no room for laying down hanging coats or stashing a stroller. Part of the reason for enclosing this is to make up for the lack of some functioning space that the client would like to have in the building. The other reason is that in spite of the fact that the property is historic, this space is kind of functionally lacking in that it's a west-facing space. It's not a hospitable space. Its connection to the interior spaces is very limited to a small door from the living room and then an angled window in the corner of the living room. And then the second floor space has this small balcony from the second floor bedroom. But the space is damp. It's not a nice place to be. And we just want to make better use of the space. So what we're proposing is by infilling the space, we're picking up on design elements. Picking up on design elements that already exist in the building, kind of echoing the trellis, picking up on the floor spandrel, spacing the window pattern related to the existing glazing above. You can see here the space. The other thing is it's right on the street. It's elevated above the street by 4 feet or so. The only time this gets light is in the evening. And then you can see on the bottom right there, I know the staff has agreed that we can get rid of this, but the glazing in that sloped roof system above, they often find dead birds either within this void space or on the roof level that have hit this glazed system up high.
What direction does this opening face?
This faces west.
West, okay.
So, there's no...
Sort of northwest.
North, yeah. There's no southern light that gets into this space.
roof structure that's there. Can we go back to that photo?
So
is that an original element, I assume?
Yes. I mean, it's an aluminum storefront framed system.
And what is the material in it?
In the front, in the vertical elevation, it's single panes of glass. Up above, it's difficult to tell whether it's glass or fiberglass. I think that it's glass, but it is not held up well over time.
Yeah, another thing to mention is all of these glazing systems and planters, they leak. So there's a lot of deferred maintenance that needs to happen.
Could we go to the proposed solutions in the elevations or the renderings? Yeah, so that's kind of the before and after. This is the proposed scheme, picking up on the trellis and the spandrel panel, and then aligning with the glazing above. There is a large tree there now. And then this is the current space with the metal grade catwalk. You see a section through the planter and the open terrace below. And then there's our proposed infill. One of the things that with this window system, we would be to maintain the character of the arch and the full depth of the arch and the shadow line that the arch creates, we'd be holding the new window wall. The front face of that plane would be behind the back plane of the arch or abutting it.
So I'll just say this is one I've been struggling with kind of since I was looking over it over the weekend. I mean, it's kind of like the equivalent of a traditional house has a front porch that gets filled in. And, you know, you can tell that it used to be a porch. And sometimes the infills are delightful and sometimes they are not. And I'm trying to kind of figure out where this falls in that category. And I think in this case, sort of the nature of this space, and I'll agree that the space from a functionality perspective as it exists seems somewhere between unuseful and just unpleasant. Like, unlike a porch where you could picture people sitting out on it and enjoying it, there's no, I'm not sure where the enjoyment is in this space. So I get it from that functional perspective. But I think that the infill is really losing the original architectural intent of kind of the discussion of the solids and the voids, and the pattern that's in it is, you know, while it's picking up on the elements that are there, it's also weakening that solid and void dialogue that the original design had. So I'm not sure if I object to the infill as a concept, or maybe with a different execution, I'd be more open to it.
I mean, if it were more glazing.
Or if it were more solid, more, if it were more brick.
No, I think it needs to be less, I would agree with John, but I think having the window and so many divided lights takes away from the image of the arch in my mind.
Mm.
And I would ask whether you all considered any alternatives to making them less busy, I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Less divided.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, I mean, that you know, we were trying to create an opportunity to allow natural ventilation into the space by having some of these casement windows. But you can see over on the left, in the corner of the dining room, is just one big sheet of glass. And I could see having something that uninterrupted being in these quadrants of the arch as well.
Yeah, I suspect that's a single glazed window. Yes. Right there. And
yes,
something that size and insulated glass could be a challenge.
And you have the issue
of having two floors.
I agree with my colleagues in that the pattern is if I buy into the infill, that the pattern is not helping the case, because, you know, we talk about character defining features when we talk about the Secretary of the Interior standards, and the openness of that arch is, you know, if we buy into the infill, it wants to be a big single sheet of glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the desire for ventilation, but, you know, it just, the house is what it is. I think, you know, honestly, I totally understand the challenges of having a void like that in your building. But for me, it is such a massively character defining feature of this building that I have issue with infilling it myself. And I'm only one of seven on this committee, but I get it. I get the need for it. I get the challenges of that space, but it is what makes this front of this main elevation of this facade so unique and interesting architecturally, and seeing up and through and out that roof. I walk by this all the time, and it's an odd space, no doubt about it. But it, to me, it's so character defining that I have challenges. I wrestled with, you know, function over design. And this is such a strong design that I find it difficult for me to approve. But again, I'm one of seven.
Would it change your opinion if the wall, and, you know, whether it's whatever that wall is, a simplified version of that wall, or pushed back a bit, and that front area became a planter, and you still got a deeper shadow line, you still got the light from above, but you were able to capture some of that interior space, and you were still able to look up and see sky through it? Would that change your opinion?
That would help dramatically, I think. I'd have to see it to, you know, to respond to it. But yes, I do think that, you know, the inclusion of vegetation in there, whether it was maintained or not, you know, planters rot, wood rots, but it has to be replaced over time, just like a wooden Victorian house would have to be, you know, maintained. But I do think that a green element as part of that space is so dramatically a part of its own design. Another thing I want to mention, the roof structure has that two-toned look. And I think I'm mourning the loss of that as well. I don't know if there's a way to do that in some way with some other material that is more, you know, resistant to the elements or other things. But, you know, that's also a major kind of design piece of this puzzle, is that, you know, it's a roof over an open space. So it's not, you know, it's not a skylight in a conservatory. It's part, you know, part garden feature. So the two tonality of that is something I'm latching onto as well. But I'm curious to hear what the others think.
Dan McCoubrey, you know, I too struggled with this. You know, Hans Egli is quite a kind of a unique architect in this period and did some very interesting, if idiosyncratic, projects. And, you know, that this recess is high on the list of kind of the idiosyncratic side of his work. So there's no doubt that it's a character-defining feature in my mind. But like John, I also understand that that space is, you know, is not very useful, and this kind of just becomes a for the eye rather than for how to live kind of space. I wonder whether there is a way that the infill, if the infill could be pushed back far enough, that the planter can continue to exist on the front, because part of Egli's scheme here was for vegetation on the building as well. And I think that wooden structure was intended to be, I guess there is a vine growing on it, but if there was some way to preserve even that wooden structure independent of the infill, push the infill back and make it as recessive as possible. I, like John, could kind of see it as an infill of a porch, but I think it's very important that you read the thinness of that arch and that perhaps still get a glimpse of the sky up through there. But like Justin, I would want to see that and how that, you know, how that would play out. As for the changes to the rear, I agree with the staff. Other comments from committee members? Is there a public comment?
This is John Farnham. No hands are raised at this time.
Well, then let's have a motion.
I'll make a motion for denial. I'll make a motion for denial of the front alcove infill as presented today, and with approval of alterations to the rear entry. The upper window. What was the upper window? Did we discuss the upper window?
It's basically a windscreen up there, I think.
Right, but isn't that? That upper window is what we were talking about above that opening, right? That Justin was
concerned about
the colored glass. So I'm going to lump that in with the front alcove as part of the denial. So I'll start over. Make a motion for approval of the alterations to the rear entry, but in the denial of the infill of the front alcove and the glass window system above.
I'll second John's motion.
And unless I hear otherwise, we have unanimous consent.
Aye.
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 Aye. All right, well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
The next item on the agenda is 1805 Pine Street, request for conceptual approval.
Good morning, everyone. This is Alex Till with staff. I'll be presenting an overview of this project this morning. But first, could we raise Lauren Thompson and Matt Kindle-Sparger to panelists for this particular application? They are the architects representing. So. This in-concept application proposes to construct a roof deck on the rear L of the Greek Revival row house and a contributing property in the Rittenhouse Fiddler Historic District. The building was constructed circa 1850. It is four stories tall with a prominent cornice brick facade and three-story rear L that faces Panama Street. The proposed roof deck will be located behind the main block of the building, on top of the rear L, and will occupy the full width, with the edge being held back several feet from Panama Street. The deck will be accessed from the fourth floor of the main block and set rather high above the roof of the L. It is a three-part stepped design with a wood pergola, among other elements. The deck will be visible from Panama Street, a service alley at the rear, with no frontage of houses. The application also references a zoning massing approval for demolition new construction at the rear of the adjacent building at 1807 Pine Street, but that has yet to be submitted as a building permit application for historical commission review. And the actual rear additions at 1807 Pine Street are smaller and allow for greater visibility of the proposed deck at 1805 Pine Street. The staff recommendation for this project is denial as presented, pursuant to Standard 9 and the roof's guideline, but approval of the concept of a deck on the rear L, provided that the height and overall massing is reduced to a more typical design.
Alex, was there any discussion about having to modify the rear wall in order to get access to this deck?
There wasn't extensive discussion about that particular detail. I think it was overshadowed mostly by the sort of deck design itself. Okay. We were positive with the concept of accessing it through that rear wall, at least, as opposed to building a pilot house or something like that.
Okay. I guess the question for the applicant is, why does the deck have to be so high above the roof of the rear L that it's become so massive an object?
Sure. Well, our client, just to answer that previous question, the proposed egress is through an existing opening in the fourth story of the building. And what happened is our client was required to replace his roof, demolished an existing roof deck, and is now seeking to make one that's a good investment and improves the quality of his home. And so what he's seeking is, you know, views that aren't impeded by his neighbor and the proposed development of his neighbor specifically. And, you know, privacy, and something that's going to be like a wonderful lasting development and part of the home that he will use. And so we're in a position where we're trying to accommodate those very specific requirements of his as the homeowner, and also do something that is contextually sensitive. And so that is the reason for it stepping up, is specifically in response to what's been approved as in a zoning permit next door, but which obviously has not been seen or reviewed by the commission, and something that steps back from the elevation on Panama Street, which is an alley street with no frontage, and is actually, you know, not really very visible. We've also stepped down the deck from the elevation of where it is level with the adjacent door as it approaches visibility. And so that, you know, we're kind of doing our best to both provide the client with what he's really after as a major investment in this property, as well as do something that's contextually sensitive and appropriate for the neighborhood.
And how large was the deck that was removed?
It was smaller than the current proposed deck. It did not extend over the entire L.
And how high was it? Because one of the unique aspects of your proposal here is to elevate the deck by a complete story. So, you know, then you're having to clad that full story that's underneath the deck with some material. It looks like potentially wood cladding that conceals beams and a whole story of nothingness underneath the deck. So sort of not really a realistic proposal.
It would be vented and it would not be truly like concealed or conditioned. That's the proposal.
It's a whole story though, isn't it? I mean, we don't have, I didn't have a section in my packets, but I'm looking at this axonometric view and it looks like it's a 10-foot wall of deck cladding, concealing what would be a full floor of an elevated deck.
At the
space below it. Is that accurate?
Correct. At the most elevated portion.
So, Amy, to answer your question, looking at Google Earth, it shows the old deck still. And that deck extended basically to cover most of that existing chimney that you can see on the plan right next to the oval-shaped table. So it's held back significantly. And it looks like it was, you would come out on the fourth floor, like above that little bump up of brick, and then go up a couple steps. So it looks like the uppermost level where that oval-shaped table is about the same height as what was there.
It is also worth noting that there are some mechanical equipment components on the roof that would, the way that the proposed roof deck is designed, that mechanical equipment would be able to stay on the roof and operate underneath the deck. It would offer some concealment of that mechanical equipment as well. But from the sight line, none of that is visible from down.
So I'm also, you know, interested in the comment you made, Lauren, about the, you know, the desire to elevate it so that their view is not blocked by the future work at 1807 Pine Street. But does not your work block their view? I mean, it doesn't seem very neighborly. And it looks like the level above the hot tub is maybe at the roof deck level as shown in your massing at 1807.
That is correct, I believe. I'm not exactly sure what was approved in next door. Yeah.
And then you add the screening elements on there too. I mean, you're basically doing to 1807 Pine Street what your client doesn't want done to them.
Well, there was a desire for privacy, so, and shade to make it more usable in a year-round condition.
Yeah, but if you're going to provide this privacy and shade, couldn't you do it at a lower deck level?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say that this is an in-progress submission, so we always can come as a discussion and always speak to the staff initially, but we're also kind of beholden to, you know, our clients' requests, so we're just
to and we appreciate you coming at this stage of the game. For me, it really comes down to the height. I mean, as Amy says, why not just build usable interior space below that? You know, I mean, you've got the void there. It's just, it doesn't need to be elevated to that level. You could still have a deck. It could still have a certain amount of privacy. And listen, I live with a property near me that 5 years ago or 8 years ago had a zoning approval for some major project, and it's never come to fruition. And that happens a lot in this town, and it may never happen. And so to design something in response to a maybe, you know, I think that's a stretch that may never happen. And then we're left with something that sits way up above everything else. And it just doesn't make sense. So personally, I'm not opposed to a deck of a very large size here, but it comes down to the height for me.
This is Rudy D'Alessandro. Where is the roof? This doesn't, is this deck a roof? Is it impervial? Or, I mean, does water go through the floorboards, or what happens?
The deck is proposed as pervious. The roof is below.
How do you access the roof? If it's leaking, what do you do?
There would be an access area to the rear of where the kitchenette area and the eating area is.
So you would have to, if you are trying to fix the roof, you would have to go through a hatch?
Yeah.
Wow. This is always a challenge.
So you'd end up making a confined space for someone that would have to go down in there to figure out how to fix the roof all under the structure.
Yeah, I mean, normally you would just lift up a deck and go down a foot or two under a roof deck. Here you're going down 10 feet, to access that roof.
I don't see the constructability of this. I mean, it may look nice in the presentation advertising type documents, but wow. This looks like a big problem.
Yeah, and I'm Dan McGruby. I think we would want to see this with the existing conditions at 1807 Pine Street shown, so we understand what the current relationships are. I agree with my colleagues. I believe that a deck of that sort of extent would be okay on the rear L. But that it really needs to come down and have a kind of an ordinary relationship to the roof below.
That can be done.
Yeah. Probably simpler to construct.
Yes, we know.
Yeah, you might get more a flat area without so many steps up and down.
A minor point too is that it looks like your neighbor has a chimney and you will be responsible to raise the chimney when you erect a deck per code.
Yes.
That's understood.
Thank you.
So that needs to appear in the renderings because that will be highly visible.
But it's clear that this photograph is out of date as well. This doesn't show the neighboring decks.
I think this is actually newer.
Oh, is it?
I may be incorrect, but I was just looking at this. I think this shows the new TPO roof that was just put on.
Ah, you're okay. Right. Yeah. And so the deck is gone. Yeah.
Right.
Gotcha.
Committee, I believe this photo is from April of 2024.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So if you look at the photo on the left, it does appear like you could come out at the fourth floor and the deck, instead of going up, should go down because that's where the L location is. So the whole deck sort of would be brought down by 8 or 10 feet. And instead of going up from that fourth floor, it comes down from the fourth floor, like the roof.
Yes. We had initial conversations with Kim with a scheme like that, and our client is concerned about the views. So, I think we're going to have to go back, and I think it's very good feedback that, you're in an urban and dynamic context. You can't kind of assume that whatever's been approved will be constructed. We'll just work from there.
Well, and who knows what the motives were for that approval? I mean, sometimes, if somebody's trying to sell a property, they'll get some giant approval and then it never happens.
Yeah.
It's just meant for resale bragging rights, So,
yeah.
The other thing I'll note is that project, if and when it happens, is going to have to come before us for a review also. And if it's that massive, we probably will have some concerns about its massing.
Yeah, just because something gets a zoning approval doesn't mean it gets historical commission approval.
that's a big part of the reason why we're here. We saw that that was happening, and we figured there's going to be some complexity here. So wanted to give a little bit of guidance and feedback on what that conversation might look like, if in fact that were imminent. And part of it was to reach out to find out because obviously we also did not see the approval, but we had kind of reached out to Kim in hopes of getting a little bit of guidance of saying, you know, is this something that you have reviewed or is in process that might change the nature of this as a discussion? So I think the feedback that you've been giving has been helpful. Thank you.
All right, other comments from committee members? Is there a public comment?
This is John Farnham. No hands are raised.
Then let's have a motion.
I'll make a motion of denial as presented, consistent with the staff recommendation.
I'll second.
Okay. Unless I hear otherwise, we have unanimous consent.
Aye.
Aye.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you.
We actually 2 minutes ahead of schedule.
9:40. We are.
Just want to make a quick note. My wife isn't feeling quite well. I may have to give her a hand in taking care of some chores. So if I'm not on board, I'm not leaving the meeting. I'm just going to be gone for a few minutes.
Good. So we're seeing staff in the office.
Yes.
Everybody's back.
Oh, wow.
That's actually just a photo of the office back.
That's though. Right.
While we're waiting, Tony, if we could, in terms of the attendees, I'm not seeing Gabriel Deck in the attendees list yet. He's the architect for this application. I do see the owner, so if we could promote the individual logged in as Isaac Jack Azran. And then if anyone else is here to represent this application, you could use the raise hand feature.
All right, it's 9:45.
Okay.
So let's proceed with 1930 Pine Street.
Okay, this is Kim Chantry with the staff. I'll read a brief overview. This application proposes to legalize aspects of a new construction townhouse at the rear of 1930 Pine Street, which deviate from the plans approved by the Historical Commission in July of 2019. Deviations from the approved plans include the use of vinyl siding instead of fiber cement siding, a front cornice that does not align with the adjacent building, a lack of a brick return on the side elevation, differing proportions and materials on the first floor, and a relocated pilot house. This application for legalization was prompted by the submission to the Department of Licenses and Inspections for a building permit amendment to include a pilot house. A pilot house was included on plans approved by the Historical Commission in 2019. So the commission did approve this project with a pilot house, but that pilot house was omitted from the drawing submitted to LNI for the building permit at that time. A pilot house was constructed nonetheless without a permit, and LNI issued a violation for construction that exceeded the approved plans. The submission of the building permit amendment to legalize the pilot house prompted the Historical Commission staff to visit the site, at which time the other deviations from the approved plans were noted and relayed to the applicant and property owner. The staff explained that the pending building permit application to legalize the as-built pilot house could not be approved in Eclipse at this time because the drawings of the overall building do not reflect the as-built conditions or the 2019 application approved by the Historical Commission. So this is an application just to legalize those aspects of the new construction townhouse that deviate from the approved plans. And the staff recommendation is denial pursuant to standard 9. When I do see we have Gabe logged in as Gabe, Tony, if we could promote Gabriel Deck. Thank you.
All
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Good morning.
Can you explain how we got here? Is that helpful for all of us to sort of understand how this happened?
Sure, yeah. So also on the call is Jack Azran, who's the owner of the project and GC as well. So he can kind of help explain some of it as well. So there's, you know, item by item, we can kind of run through as to kind of how we got here. You know, we can maybe start with the cladding on the side elevations, if you'd like, which I believe Jack can attest to it, just really just being a simple oversight, and we can course correct by replacing that cladding on both sides of the building. Right, Jack?
Yes. Can you guys hear me? I'm not sure.
Yes.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
So we'll remove the vinyl siding. We'll put the approved siding back on to remediate that issue.
Along with the entryway as well.
Okay.
What about the some of the other aspects that were mentioned, like the cornice height? That's probably one of the more difficult ones.
Yeah, so the cornice height discrepancy, talking through that with Jack, I think it kind of happened that way for a combination of reasons. The adjacent property to the left that you see in that cornice height, the intention was to align with it. And the survey work that we were able to do, which was a bit limited in the field back when we started design, ended up a little bit short, or rather we thought it was a little bit taller than it actually was in the field, just because we weren't able to access the building. So between the existing building actually being about a foot shorter, and then the when it came time to build and frame, the spring point of the mansard got a little bit higher than what was on the plans as well. So those two things kind of pulled those two lines apart from each other. You can see that we do have the window heads more or less aligning at the third floor, the top of the existing window head aligning with the top of our window head below the mansard level. So that ended up nice. But yeah, the cornices ended up apart from each other, as you can see.
Is there a way to remediate that? I mean, can bricks be removed and a cornice brought down?
So we've talked through that and kind of wanted to, you know, get the feedback of the board to see what you guys would prefer. You know, if you were to kind of drop that height of brick down by either covering it up or removing brick, you know, you end up with a flat portion of, you know, the mansard cladding or the cladding above the brick that kind of might read a little bit strange, as kind of typically a mansard kind of jumps off from a material transition versus, you know, a vertical face and then setting it back. So we talked through that idea, and then also maybe a adjustment where we could clad over top of the top, you know, maybe a few courses of brick to kind of drop that material transition a little bit lower to be closer to the cornice to the left, but maintain the our cornice height, which happens just at the windowsill line, just to effectively make a deeper kind of cladding underneath our cornice to where the brick would end.
And I'll say the other issue you would have if you tried to actually align with the cornice is that existing cornice is hitting in the middle of your soldier course above your window, so you can't even come down to that original height.
Right. So it's
either. I was thinking a similar thought about the idea of keeping the cornice line where it is, but in essence making it taller. I think it's going to look a little anemic. If you think about a traditional cornice profile at the top, you have the projecting cornice and then like a frieze band and then like a little architrave band at the bottom. It's kind of a three-part thing, but what makes that work is that the cornice part at the top has a little bit of a projection and a heft to it. And if you look at the property to the left, you know, there's a projection and a shadow line that kind of gets lost on yours. So I think for that idea to work, you'd almost need to bump out the whole upper part a little bit more to give it a little bit more presence. And then you can put that band over the brick that you mentioned. And then I'd put like a trim piece at the bottom. And so you kind of are starting to replicate that three part cornice element to it. It would help take away the high forehead look above your windows too.
Kim, could you turn back to figure one? I think you get a really good sense of the proportion or lack of at that cornice line.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at that band of brick between the head of that third floor window and that cornice line, it's just too fat. It's tall, literally taller than the one between the first and second floor. And I want that to have more wood in there, or more, you know, material for that to read proportionally right. That entire cornice should, as John just said, be beefier, boxier, deeper, and come down onto the brick, so that there's not so much visible brick showing. And I think, you know, there's row houses all over the city where you can see that proportion working better. Another thing, Kim, can you zoom in on this at all? This is one of those cases where, like, you know, we have gotten so far away from material reviews, and there are literally three different material colors on this facade other than brick. It's the black of the dormers, it's the gray standing seam, it's the vinyl on the sides. And, you know, color matters and material color matters. And, you know, we need to be able to review those things. I'm saying this to the staff as well as everyone else. You know, I would not have approved that two-tone kind of look. To me, it just stands out and makes everything look worse. You know, the meat of those dormers, they're just too big and boxy as they are. And it's exacerbated by the two-tone look of the roof material and the cladding of the dormers. You know, I think the dormers too, there's no definition on those, on that roof line of those dormers. It's like, literally you can see the standing seams of the metal poking up because there's no thickness there. There's no definition. And I'm not trying to make this building look like it's from 1860, but there's just shadow lines and things that help things look like they fit. And this, so much of this kind of jumps out. Another thing we didn't talk about was the brick returning around the corner. The approval had the brick wrapping the corner so that it didn't look like a wallpaper. And is there any ability to do that?
In the zoning application images, renderings, in the beginning, we had hoped to wrap the brick. When we got in there and realized we had more of an encroachment coming from the garage structure on the right-hand side, at the building permit submission, we did not show that brick return just because it was going to be additional space loss where he already had lost space in the width from the encroachment of the adjacent structure. So it never made its way onto the building permit drawings that were reviewed. To add it now, I don't know if it's going to result in a clean detail because you kind of have that gable shed, you know, transition there. So if you had like maybe a lintel bolted on, you'd still end with like a gap where that shed runs into a horizontal lintel. So I don't know if it's going to help or hurt things more to try to add that in now. You also got a tooth in the brick and it might just get messy.
But in this story, case, mean, a potential retrofit on this to replicate what was approved would be going with a ThinTech brick system, bricks this thick mounted on a system that provides a drainage plane behind, so it'd be closer to the thickness of what is there. And yes, you'd still not be able to thin the brick to the front facade, but you know, with the matching brick there, I think that joint could be forgivable to get back to what was approved.
Jack, do you have anything to speak to whether or not that could be reasonable for you?
I mean, that's, it's going to be really kind of hard to do, quite honestly. And then you have the gap at the bottom there where it slants, where the wall meets the roof of the garage is probably a 6 or 8 inch 45 degree angle there. So I don't know how great that would look at the end anyway. Plus, like, as you said earlier about teething it in, that, you know, that's going to, I don't know how that would look, quite honestly.
While it's not ideal, I mean, you have expansion joints in brick frequently now.
So it was more substantial and more meaty. You could take it all the way back to the top of the mansard line. You know, beyond just a foot, it could go 3 feet back to give it more meat.
Yeah, which is what was approved, I believe.
No, I think it was. Well, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right.
Yeah, the intention was for it to go back to that kind of mansard point.
Yeah. Again, I don't think it was on a building permit. I don't even think it was. And then on the interior of my garage, you couldn't even do it because there's no spacing for the tracks of the garage door, so forth and so on. If I were to do it on the original plan, I guess that was approved in 19. I don't know what was approved thereafter. I'm not sure. Also, if I could, on the face of the adjacent house next door there, if we can show that, just to let you know, that fascia going across, if we can show it, that fascia going across has a dip in it by about 4 inches, just to let you know. If you look at it, you see the slope on it from left to right?
Yeah, see the shadow line?
If you go on the right side, if you the other view, the other perspective that you have, looking from, I think, the other, yeah, there you go. Maybe not the other one.
We can see it.
It's a pitch. It's the pitch for the gutter. Or for
No.
Yeah, oh, I doubt that. That's not an original piece of
wood. No, it's drought.
Someone just put a fascia up there.
Yeah, it's dropped by around 4 inches. So that affected, I guess, the visual on that as well, just to give you a heads up.
I do have a question about right above that. There's a piece of, I'm not sure what the material is, but is that a piece of the party wall coming up that I'm seeing right there? It's visible in the other photograph.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it is.
Yeah.
That's part of this new construction is what it is. It's the party wall extension that they've just roofed over.
Yeah.
That's the unfortunate part about this, 18-inch overbuild.
Very messy.
It is messy.
Well, I agree with my colleagues that, I mean, with some of them anyway, that I don't see you taking brick down here as necessarily a good solution. I think beefing up the cornice and then having it wrap and do something with that piece of extended party wall would help a lot. There are plenty of instances where newer buildings don't quite align with older buildings. But then I think that the side walls that we're seeing up there, if it's all the dark material, it will go will look more like a roofing system and not like a siding.
Right. It
could even have vertical, could be even a sort of a vertical standing seam system.
Mm-hmm.
It looks a little more roof-like than siding-like. And then going to the other side, I'm not sure about this part of the issue to me there, the big exposed party wall is just so such a vast area of whatever color. But perhaps, I don't know, my colleagues can chime in, but if there was some small cornice that ran there and then the upper part was a dark vertical system to try to make it a little more roof-like, and then that the siding was below. I realize that's kind of, it's not a real mansard, but at least it would reduce the scale, visual scale of that vast expanse.
Well, and the other thing we're seeing here too are those three PVC risers.
Yes, I'm wondering about, is that going to be a railing up there?
No, those are required. You have to extend your, Gabe, do you want to?
They're the plumbing vents. They have to have a height maintained when they're adjacent to a roof deck.
So normally people put them in the pilot house or they link them in some way that there's not giant risers visible. That is a very unfortunate design feature there, because they're gonna stay that way.
Since they're vents only, you don't have to go straight up. You can, at a certain point in time, you can take them interior-wise at a 45. You don't have to go straight up with a vent.
Yeah, what if you grouped them together and made like a faux chimney or something just to get rid of the... I mean, it's just these giant PVC things are just terrible looking.
Yeah, I can't speak to the code, the plumbing code, for if it's possible to gang them together, or if you had to keep them separate for different stacks.
Where is the bathroom? Because the vents don't have to go straight up.
They typically can be ganged.
Yeah, I don't know if how those correspond to the bathrooms below. We didn't have a plumbing design piece of the building permit itself, so it wasn't something that our team was involved in the coordination on.
Well, obviously you started a project without knowing enough about the original structures. Something's really bad here. I can't figure out how to do it.
I do think this is a good example for the staff to see. You know, you do have to raise those plumbing risers above. There's a part of the code about how high they have to be above roof decks. And this is an example of how that's done where you're not disguising it. And many people find a way to disguise that. So it's just something to look out for, because this is what we don't want to see.
Did we hit upon all the elements? Or is there anything else? I don't think
there if I could, if we were to replace the siding with the fiber cement boards on the left and right, as we spoke about earlier, as Gabe spoke about earlier. Now, the rear part and the roof, the parapet wall within the interior of the roof deck, that could be left alone. Am I right in saying that? Because you don't see it from any part of the streets or anywhere else.
Well, I don't think we can approve everything by verbalizing this today. You got some work ahead of you to present details of how you're going to do this work.
Not a problem.
Isn't the brick pier in the front also different? Like, I wasn't part of the original approval of this, but I keep looking at it and it just feels very jarring. And it doesn't look like that was part of the original.
No, the original did not include the brick pier. We had the brick returning back on the left side into the recessed entry, which you can see was installed, but brick did end up in the space between the recessed entry and the garage door, which was not the intention.
How did that happen? I mean, it's just very jarring. You create like this really little narrow corridor. It
Yeah, the door is set in.
Yeah, it's very odd.
In a vestibule.
Yeah, the door is recessed back, which was on the original plans. But yeah, that brick veneer in between on the left side of the garage door was not the original plan. I don't know if there ended up being a lintel that spanned that entire opening in the field or not. Jack, do you know if that ended up happening?
The lintel went across, all the way across, and I guess there was an overhang there, and I guess we just ran it up the wall there to cover that gap of four or five inches.
Maybe that's why the garage door's so tight. No space.
That really has nothing to do with it, quite honestly.
Well, I just feel like it also makes that entry door feel more like this tight corridor rather than a little bit more open by adding this massive pier in the middle. It looks really off. So with the lintel spans, there was no real reason for the pier.
Well, I think originally, had the garage door come across, and then where the brick pier was, it was just done in the metal cladding that turned back. So
right.
Basically, you had an opening that read as a single wide opening.
Right.
Almost as almost like an homage to the garage door that was there before.
And given the current configuration, one would expect to find the door out closer to the plane of the facade rather than set back so far.
There's a little like horizontal bar above that opening. It's like a tannish color. Is that the ceiling plane or what?
Yeah, he did that. I mean, that's going to be replaced regardless. He literally did it the day before you guys came out to take pictures, and I didn't approve that either. I don't know what that is. That'll be changed. It's a capping, I guess, a metal capping.
It could be black just like the rest of the garage.
Because
I think if you took down that brick at the pier and wrapped it in black material, and it came out to the plane of the brick or held back like a half inch or whatever, so that you're not exposing that lintel per se, that might work if it was kind of in the same plane as those black bars above the garage door.
Yeah, but doesn't the lintel actually have to bear on the brick?
I would imagine something's bearing there.
Well, if it was designed and detailed per what was originally approved, it should clear span the entire length. If two separate lintels were put in,
right?
Yeah,
for that's a cost saving measure or some other measure, then yeah, there that might be the problem. But the original approved design looked like it would have clear spanned.
Right. And is that brick lintel actually bearing on that brick veneer, or is it bolted back to the structure behind?
Right. It really depends on, that's exactly.
I was installed. Because if it was bolted back, then it could be 16 pieces of lintel and it wouldn't make a difference.
Right. Because then it's not really a lintel at that point.
It's a shelf angle.
Yeah.
Talked about the design of the garage door. I mean, would that have been approved, Kim, as it's shown there?
I'd have to go back and look at the drawings to see what had been called out for the garage door.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell.
There's no glass in the rendering.
The windows, yeah.
All right, any other comments? Well, let's have a motion.
Public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry, public comment.
No hands are raised.
Now let's have a motion.
I would make a motion for denial pursuant to standard 9. I think you've heard all the comments that we made during the discussion to inform what a resubmission could look like.
I'll second.
And unless I Here, otherwise we have unanimous consent.
Aye.
All right, well, thank you.
And would you mind just explaining, I guess, for the resubmission process, for we would propose the details to make adjustments, and that's kind of like what you're expecting to see based on all the feedback. Is that correct?
That's correct. And you would work with the staff there, and then I think resubmit to us.
Okay. Thank you very much. I just haven't been through this arrangement before.
The staff could approve it on their own, but they also have the option of sending it back to us.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, next on the agenda, we have 248 North Lawrence Street.
Good morning. If we could please elevate Joseph Jankuska, who is the applicant from J2A Architects, and I'll read an overview. This application proposes to construct a five-story condominium building with pilot house and roof deck on a vacant lot at 248 North Lawrence Street in the Old City Historic District. This lot was vacant when the Old City Historic District was designated in 2003 and was classified as non-contributing. It is an undeveloped site. In cases such as this, the Architectural Committee and Historical Commission are entitled to review and comment jurisdiction only. The staff comments that the proposed building would be more compatible with the Old City Historic District if the primary facade colors changed from white to red to reflect the red brick in the area. The height of the front of the building is more in keeping with the neighboring historic building, and another material instead of vinyl siding was chosen for the side elevations, such as cement fiber board, brick veneer, or a dark stucco, pursuant to standard 9.
This is a highly visible property because of its proximity to what's a large view shed from Ben Franklin Bridge and what's currently an open space. So I'm wondering if you could start by responding to the staff's requests and the ability to change or adjust the design to better fit in this district.
Are you asking me to do that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we have a very narrow site. The garage on the left and the billboard sign is not part of our property. You can see the yellow outline where we are. We're next to an existing apartment building. We were meeting all the allowable zoning requirements, the height, the width, the open area. Because of the height of being four floors or more, we need two means of egress. That's the purpose of having the two doors to the front. There are two separate means of egress. We do understand that there's a lot of visibility from the side and probably from the rear. There's no other building behind us. So we have created basically an all glass rear facade with balconies. We kept the balconies on the rear, not the front. We are introducing a larger scale unit of windows, which gives that big bay on the front, but we're toning it down with the bronze color and creating a contrast with the limestone masonry. We did not want to do, there's a basement that we're going to be digging down approximately 5 feet. We didn't want any window wells in the front of the building. That's why we have the large piece of window on the first floor, flanked by the two glass doors. Everything will be the darker bronze color. We originally thought maybe to do this in brick, not knowing what's going to be to the left of us, except for a billboard and a garage. So we wanted to introduce something that wasn't just saying, hey, look at this contemporary building, but we picked some materials that have been used and stood the test of time, but was not going to be a brick facade with punch windows. We wanted to have it a little more upscale. This is going to be a condo building, not an apartment building. We want it to have its own presence, its own identity, and we're trying to create its own signature.
I'm having a hard time just relating it to the adjacent buildings. It doesn't, you know, there's no, we don't know how tall it is relative to those buildings. We don't know where it sits, if it sits flush with the facades. You know, there's nothing in this set of documents that we received. It's sort of like a UFO that doesn't have any connection to the context. So is the facade that you're proposing actually flush with the adjacent bricks?
It's flush. Actually, the adjacent building is encroaching on our site approximately, let's just call it 1 foot. So we had to work around that building. Our intent was not to, we didn't feel the need to replicate that building. We just wanted to create some visual variety, which is what cities really are. It makes cities so charming without just duplicating everything on the street. Across the street, there's another building, but a completely different scale. So the building has some, the street has different character. Duplicating brick, I guess we're not opposed to it. I technically don't think it's necessary in a city as rich an environment as Philadelphia.
But the rendering doesn't look like it's actually adjacent to the building that this is going to be built next to.
Okay, well, we can adjust that. So it is, it's actually, that building's actually touching our building. It's on our site.
But one can't truly understand, as following up on Amy's comments, what the real relationship is of this building in scale and massing to its neighbor.
Okay, we tried to do that by the adjacent elevation. What's hatched is the building adjacent to it, so you can see how much larger our building is. It's basically
okay, so we can't see where the window lines are and where all
but I need that probably front elevation, not a side elevation.
Okay.
And following up on what Amy is saying, while limestone is an appropriate building material, I don't believe it's an appropriate building material within the context of this historic district.
Okay.
There is a lot of variety on this street in terms of building type and detail, but they're all brick.
Okay.
They're all brick. There's industrial buildings, there's row houses.
Churches.
And
we're not opposed to that. I'm just, we were looking for a material that would give this building its own signature. But if the brick is that important, we're not opposed to it. Lining up of the windows, we can certainly address that issue.
The other thing is the giant picture window, sorry, Amy, at the first floor. What's that all about?
Well, this is a condo building, so we want, when you come in, we have raised the first floor elevation ceiling, and that window actually spans. It's a piece of the window for the basement, and it's a piece of the upper part is for the central lobby of the building.
But the rendering shows that there's masonry at the bottom. This, your one image shows glass stopping, we'll say 12, 15 inches above grade. The other shows it extending to grade. What is the intent?
The intent is we're going to have some masonry, like in the rendering, because we are going to, there will be a, when you come in those stairs, you're going to have to go up some more steps to get to the first floor. So that we don't want the window. We didn't want a window well in the front. We didn't want the window touching the pavement. So the rendering is correct.
And I don't believe your rendering agrees with your plans as far as the window and the basement window, which is shown considerably narrower in the plan.
Okay, the window in the elevation is, that is the first floor window.
For the first floor, but you said that the window is or is not connected to the basement, or the basement window that you showed doesn't, what does it look out on if there's no window well?
The window the way it will look out on the streetscape.
Well, then something's terribly off between the plans and the elevations.
I'll take your comment.
Look at your plans.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at A1.1.
It says first floor plan.
Well, it's all the plans.
And it says typical.
It just doesn't. It's not. Something's not aligning, and we'll just.
The other thing that doesn't jive is the bay above on the plans. It's a three-sided bay, and on the elevation, it's a straight vertical box.
Can you put up the plan that you're looking at?
It's almost as if the rendering is a photograph of a building. It's not this building. Because the recessed entrances that show up on the rendering do not exist on the plan. The bay windows that are on the plan do not show up on the rendering. That window is flush with the limestone.
Okay. The window on the basement will be the same width as the first floor window.
And your plans don't agree with that statement, but okay. That's I mean, I think we need to stick to the global picture because this is a review and comment, right, okay. John? So, not to say you don't need to revise your plans to make everything agree, but
I think the size and scale of the building on this site is a puts a lot of emphasis on the, what would that be, the south facade, which is currently, what is it, a five-story blank wall. And I'm wondering what we can do to make that fit into the context of the city. It says temporary vinyl siding, which is not really a material that we find or use in Old City in this historic district.
And I do agree with that. We'd love to put windows and stuff there, but we certainly can't do that because of code. We could choose a different material. We are behind a billboard for most of our building, but there will be, I'm sure, in the future, another building there. But we would certainly entertain doing. It is a big square rectangle, and we would love to put. You know, we just can't put windows in there. There's no setback. But we can address the material and make it a little more pleasing before the next building's built.
Well, what does that mean? I mean, the staff has suggested cement fiberboard, maybe that's panelized. They've suggested brick veneer or dark stucco.
Yeah. On the back, we don't want to do the stucco. On the back of the building, we're using metal frame windows and cement fiberboard. We can wrap the cement fiberboard with a pattern across that large side elevation to create a little more interest in that side and have a little more permanent feel to the building.
This is Rudy D'Alessandro. In my opinion, that wall's too big to just have siding on it. It needs to be masonry.
So you're recommending a combination or a complete masonry facade?
You need to provide options.
Okay.
Dan McCoubrey, I think that anything that looks like clapboard is, it's just gives the sense that it's a wood frame wall, and that if there's a panelized system that you're using on the rear elevation, some panelized system could extend onto these party walls.
I would think you would have maybe the first floor area would all be brick, and then stucco and brick, the brick cornice. You need to do something to make it more compatible.
Well, and I agree. The last project where he didn't wrap his brick, and I think if we entertain the brick facade on the front as masonry, and we feel like it's wrapping the building in some proportion with maybe another material and weave them together so it looks like a little more interesting facade, it will look like a permanent, we'll show it to you, it'll look more like a permanent, because who knows when the next building will be built? It probably will be, but we're not disagreeing with you.
There's some green space behind the property. Is that, what is that land? Is that?
We wish it was ours. It's not.
Is it public park?
We cannot have access to it. That's why we have to have internal egress to the front of the building.
Because your rear facade is extremely visible.
Yeah, that's why we've created, we've broken it up. We've changed the scale. We've introduced, it's pretty much an all window system because there's great views out the back of this building. They're unobstructed views probably permanently. These are condo units, full floor users, and we want to take advantage of the green. So our lower level will be a walkout and it'll be a terrace up to the rest of our property. We're not going to do a wind. We don't want window wells anywhere. But the back of the building's been broken up, and it's been angled to take advantage of the best view. And we've already introduced where there's no windows. We're using cement fiberboard there. And I see the potential to wrap that around to the big broad side with an introduction of brick that will come from the front. I think we have a really interesting side elevation without windows.
Speaking of the side elevation, I see two standalone pilot houses drawn.
Yes.
But on the plan, it calls for a pilot house loft with slider windows facing to the back and then a roof deck in the back. So there's actually a much bigger mass on the top that extends all the way kind of side to side.
Yeah, we can only do a certain amount of square footage, but it's going to only be used from the upper unit. So when you come up, we're just trying to dress it up a little bit. We don't want it to be large. We're not allowed to have it large.
Which is correct, the plan or the elevation?
The elevations are correct.
Then the roof deck that's back there, which is, you know, fine, and it's on the right side. It's a pretty big deck and probably going to get bigger when you get rid of that pilot house. But how are the guards being done? Is the top of the wall guard height?
Yes.
I see.
Because both sides are on a property line, so we can't have them open to the next property. We want to keep the fire rate integrity up through the building all the way to the roof deck.
But both stairs are continuing up to the roof.
Yeah, we're going to need two means of egress because of code.
How many, we've done so many roof decks. Roof decks have just a single, it's a single user.
Because it's above the fourth floor. We've had this issue before.
Even though it's dedicated to a single unit.
Yeah, you can go through one floor, and we sat down with the building people already, and we on multiple projects like this, and they prefer us to have two means of egress on a building that's four stories or more.
But it's not as if the stairs are remote. You're going past one to get to the other.
They have to be to be 25% of the distance of the area served, and that's how we have the door set up. We're not gonna get a variance on the code, on any life safety code issue. And we're trying to keep them towards away from the front. You have to be 5 feet back from the front. We're way far back, and the roof deck will only be towards the rear of the building.
It just struck us as odd, because most of the times when we're reviewing these things, it's 4 stories or lower, or it's,
well, if it's lower,
it's multiple users. So then you expect it. This was just five stories,
and I'm telling you, we're just concerned about life safety as much as the aesthetics of the building.
All right, other comments from committee members? Is there a public comment?
No hands are raised.
All right, then let's have a motion.
Is there a motion on a review and comment?
We don't need to, but we can.
My motion would be denial of the application as presented.
I'll second.
Unless I hear otherwise, we have unanimous consent.
Yes.
Aye.
All right, well, we appreciate your listening to the input.
So what does this actually mean? Hello?
John?
Very quickly, we can talk to you additionally offline about this, but with a review and comment application, the committees and the Historical Commission's comments are non-binding. You're welcome to accept them, but your only obligation is to show your design to the Historical Commission and Architectural Committee at their public meetings and to listen to their comments, but they are non-binding and you're not obligated to implement them. You can submit for a permit application once you've gone through the process and heard the comments.
Okay, appreciate it.
All right, well, thank you.
All right, can folks see that screen?
Not yet.
No. Not yet, okay. Let's try this again. How about now?
Nope.
Not yet.
Okay, let's try this one. How about now?
No.
Oh, I know what.
There we go.
Now it should be working. Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah, right.
Sorry about that.
All right. The next on our agenda is 1615 Green Street, unit number 2.
All right. I don't see Corbin Mills or Nunzio Terra on the panelist list. I do see an iPhone. So if either of you are here or anyone is here representing this application, please raise your hand and you can be recognized as a panelist. I will go ahead and read a brief overview. This application proposes to install Anderson Fibrex windows in 2 second-floor front facade openings. The proposed 2/2 simulated divided light windows do not match the original in terms of materials, and the Anderson inset window will build down the opening. One of the provided section drawings depicts a sash replacement kit in a plank frame, not a full frame system with OG brick mold, and is therefore inaccurate. The Historical Commission staff informed the applicant of this and asked for accurate drawings, but nothing additional or revised has been submitted. The existing brick mold should remain exposed as part of any window replacement and should not be capped. The building at 1615 Green Street is one of 12 semi-detached houses on the north side of the 1600 block of Green Street. It was built in 1859 and rehabilitated using historic tax credits in 1985. Although the applicant states the current windows are vinyl, they appear to date from a 2007 wood sash replacement application. The staff recommends denial pursuant to standard six, and owing to incompleteness. And don't know if we have any hands raised or applicants in attendance today, but that concludes my presentation. So if they're here, they can respond to the staff, or the committee can dive in.
Dan, go ahead, Rudy.
Is there a reason we're replacing these windows? Is it rot? Are the windows falling apart? yard, or why are they replacing them?
We have received no communication regarding the condition of the windows as installed today. I've been out and looked at them. I guess they look a little aged, but I can't honestly say I can see a compelling reason why they absolutely need to be changed based on visual observation.
So the owner never actually gave a reason for the replacement?
I don't believe so in the application.
So all the windows, now the first floor, the second floor, and the third floor windows are all existing and operational, or is there something wrong with the second floor windows?
I can't speak to the, in an in-depth way, to the condition of those windows.
So I noted that the proposal said about rotted woodwork, they would be repaired or replaced. Is there any rot? What's the existing conditions?
Well, they have not provided any in-depth information about the condition beyond that description. I don't believe that the code as written necessarily requires that they maintain the existing windows, which are not the original historic windows anyway. They're from a 1985. Or they're from a permit in 2007.
So but they all match. But they all match, right? All the floors look the same. You're not going to have the second floor look different than the first or the third.
Well, that's one of the challenges with a condominium-type building is you have different owners proposing changes at different times. What the commission and what the staff has endeavored to do over time is try to ensure that the windows meet the historical appearance that was typical of buildings of that era, and therefore ensure some level of continuity, which these windows, as was explained in the overview and in the materials you've received, has not demonstrated that they would do.
Backing up a second, Daniel, is there a way, we've had a number of applications over the last few years in conjunction with Renewal by Anderson for Fibrex windows. There always seems to be some sort of a disconnect on how those windows are treated within the historic frames and detailing and everything else. Is it something that the staff could reach out to that company and say, to save everybody time and effort, this is what we expect, and you might have already done that.
Well, I know in the most recent application that came before you all over on Front Street last year, communication with the applicant, like calling people out public, but communication with the applicant was difficult, and getting responsiveness and getting them to sort of understand the rules under which the commission is operating was a challenge. But I've not been on the staff that long, so I don't know if.
I saw Kim nodding. Other
hi, Kim Chanter with the staff. I'll just jump in, just to say that we do receive a lot of applications from Renewal by Anderson. We have approved them for, window openings that aren't visible from the public right of way. We have explained every time we say that our staff can't approve an application, we explain why. But our staff cannot, the commission staff cannot deny an application. We can only say, we can't approve this, the staff can't approve this, and you have the option to submit the application for review by the Architectural Committee and the Historical Commission. And so on several occasions, they have chosen to go that route, this being one of them. And I think at that point, they leave it up to the property owner to make the, make the decision as to whether they want to go through with this full review process.
Thank you.
All right, any other comments? Is there a public comment?
No hands are raised.
All right, well, let's have a motion.
I'll make a motion of denial pursuant to standard 6 and owing to incompleteness.
I'll second.
All right, unless I hear otherwise, we have unanimous consent.
Aye.
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 All right, well, that completes our agenda for today. And we will see you all next month.
Very good.
Bye.